You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurscast. In this two-part mega pre-draft episode, I spoke with Project Spurs writer Benjamin Bornstein on Tuesday for part one. And then in part two, you'll hear my interview with former Project Spurs writer Trevor Zegras that we recorded on Monday. So I'm really looking forward for you all to listen to this episode where I had Ben and Trevor on. We usually do this every year where I have the three of us together, but unfortunately our schedules just didn't work out on the same day. So I actually recorded Trevor's part first, and then I recorded Ben's part second. So you'll hear from both Ben and Trevor, and they're very plugged into the draft, and you know they have a lot of knowledge about draft prospects. So that's why I definitely want to have them both on. It's just that you'll have to hear the different segments of the interview. We discuss whether the Spurs should try to trade up for another lottery pick and who San Antonio should draft if they do trade up, as well as second round pick prospects. So let's go ahead and jump right into this episode with Ben first, and then in part two I'll have the interview with Trevor. And now joining me is Project Spurs writer Benjamin Bornstein. Ben, you and I are recording this on Tuesday evening, June 20th. So there has been more rumbling since after the segment that I recorded with Trevor Zegras. So what I want to do first, Ben, is go through some of these latest trade rumblings about whether or not the Spurs are going to move up in the draft. They're going to at least try to. And then let's just get your opinion there, and then we'll kind of go into the prospects. So first, let's go through the trade rumblings. On Monday, June 19th, Mike Finger, the San Antonio Express News, reported that he had a discussion with Spurs GM Brian Wright, and he posed a few questions to Wright, and here's some of Wright's responses. So as far as Finger asked him, any realistic deal out there that would make the Spurs open to trading either Devin Vassell or Keldon Johnson, Brian Wright said no flatly. They want to try to give these young players a chance together with Wembanyama, or he couldn't say Wembanyama's name, but with the acquisition of the number one pick. Right. Then Finger asked him, what if there's a combination of combining 33 and 44 to move up? Is that realistic? And he said, sure, maybe. That's what Wright responded. Also, maybe using some of those future first round picks. Is that a move maybe the Spurs do? And Brian Wright, yes, said, yeah, that's kind of on the table. Then on Tuesday, Finger was asked, about if there's a really good offer out there, are the Spurs going to turn it down for like a player like Keldon if they want to move him? And Finger said that, yeah, when you're on the record as a GM, you have to basically say no. That's like a hard question. So like he says that, he doesn't think they'll move Keldon, but he did say, he wouldn't be, it wouldn't be shocking if Keldon ends up getting moved or a player under contract, even though, after he said no on the record, Brian Wright. Then also on Tuesday, June 20th, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer wrote an article, his latest mock draft update. And on there, he had some notes about the Spurs. He said this. He said, there's been rumblings that the Spurs are exploring trades for a second lottery pick. Rival executives speculate they're targeting one of the Thompson twins, either Amin or Oster. or Bilal Coulibaly, who is Wembanyama's teammate. So I guess my question to you here, Ben, is do you agree with that? That if there's a deal out there where they can, that they, there's a player they like in the lottery area, that maybe the Spurs would be willing to put Keldon Johnson on the table if they had to, or they wouldn't just like flatly say no? What are your thoughts there?
I would agree. It has to be a deal that's just too good to say no to. I mean, it's got to be a team that is kind of desperate for a role player, mm-hmm. or desperate for a guy who can be your third or fourth option, I should say, and would fill. He's a great energy guy. Obviously, Keldon Johnson does a lot of nice things. He's gotten better on his shooting. His percentages may not say that this year. This past season, his volume went up drastically with them to sell out for so many games. And frankly, with this team needing literally anybody to just shoot the ball. So I think that there's probably going to be a deal or two out there that are going to be incredibly enticing, and they're going to involve Keldon Johnson. And again, you don't really want to include Keldon Johnson. I think Brian Wright really does have the intention of, we're going to try and run it back with the same team plus Victor Wembanyama, plus whoever else we pick in this draft. And I think the more likely scenario is that the Spurs package the two second rounders and future assets rather than a current player in order to move up in this draft. And, you know, you're talking about one of the Thompson twins. If you're talking about one of the Thompson twins, you're trying to move up into the top 10. That's what that
says. Yes, correct.
Bilal Coulibaly, I think, is the guy you can get just outside of that at 11 or 12.
Yep.
Still a lottery pick, but you're in the later part of the lottery, probably a little easier to get to. And there's probably some teams who are sitting in that no man's land of maybe 10 or 11 to 14 who are going to say, yeah, give us some later picks. We'll take flyers on very low risk guys. We just barely missed the playoffs this year. Whether it was because, you know, if you're the Dallas Mavericks, you made a trade in season and you want Luka and Kyrie to just get more chemistry together, and you don't need other guys. You just need some dudes to fill out the roster.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Dallas Mavericks have been a target of a lot of trade rumors,
mm-hmm.
In that regard, because they're a team, I think, that's kind of dangling that pick on people and saying, yeah, you can come get it for the right price. Please come take the pick from us. We want to give it to you. So I think the Spurs maybe do that. I mean, there's a bit of in division rivalry there, but if the price is right, I think the Spurs might take the bait.
Yes, as Trevor Zikraff and I discussed in a segment that you're going to hear later, Spurscast listeners, when I spoke with him in an interview on a previous day, the problem, like Ben just noted there, is that a lot of these teams that are in that 6 to like 14 range, they're not those teams that just want assets anymore. These are the teams that need, you know, good, like Ben said, role players that are going to contribute right away. That's why we say a player like Keldon Johnson, you know, might have to be included in one of these deals. And so before we go through the prospects, Ben, let's just talk about those teams in the 6 to 14 range. So what I have here is I have their number where they're going to draft. And then I have the words WNP, and that means win now player. These are not teams that just want, you know, future first or future seconds, you know, that kind of stuff. They want a player who can come in, whether start or maybe come off the bench, a real contributor right away. And that's why you think of Keldon as that player. So first we have at 6, the Magic, who probably want a win now player. We know the Pacers want a starting caliber wing. They said that's been reported out there. So the Pacers are 7, who don't want future assets. The Wizards, yes, they're probably heading a rebuild direction now that they move Bradley Beal. So yes, you know, Wizards are still probably staying there. The Jazz kind of, you know, they still kind of want to rebuild a little bit while being competitive. The Mavs, like you mentioned, Ben, are definitely a team that wants a good player right now. The Magic, they have 11. They want a good player. We have Thunder at 12, kind of, you know, it kind of depends. The 13 is the Raptors. We don't know quite what direction they're heading in the event they lose Fred VanVleet and free agency. And then, of course, the Pelicans are 14. They still want to stay competitive. They're in that win now mode as well. So that's the problem, is that you can't just say you want to give, you know, those 2 second rounders or future first to a team, because a lot of these teams may say no, they want a win now player. So now, knowing that, let's talk about some of these players in that that like 6 to 14 range, I would say. So you already discussed Amen Thompson. He's probably not there. He goes, his draft range is like 4 to 9. He probably goes about 5th is the average mock for him. We have Jairus Walker, that player who the Spurs have interviewed before in that 5 to 7 range. He's supposed to go somewhere around there. We have Amen's brother, Asar, who's supposed to go in that like 5 through 10 range. We have Anthony Black. His mock average is about 8th. He's like 6th to 11th in the ranges. Bilal, like you mentioned, Ben, can go anywhere from like 9 to 16, probably about 12th is the perfect place for him. And then a player that the Spurs, I believe, interviewed or worked out was Cason Wallace. His draft range is about 8 to 16, so he's more of that late lottery kind of projection. Any of those players intrigue you, Ben? Do you think the Spurs, if even if they had to put Keldon on the table, that they should go out and get one of these players?
Yeah, I think Bilal Coulibaly is a guy who's picking up a lot of steam, and he's a guy who's really not just picking up steam as a potential Spurs kind of player, but he's picking up steam as just a guy who is moving up in the first round. I think beginning of the year, not on a whole lot of people's radar. He was very much, guys who really get deep into the draft, who are much better with the overseas stuff than I am. They knew about him and they're like, yeah, you know, Victor Wembanyama, obviously the guy on Mets 92, but Bilal Coulibaly, very nice player, be on the lookout. So now everybody is kind of feeding off it because Bilal Coulibaly has been playing really well the last month or so of their season. And, you know, he helped their team get to the finals of their league. So he's a good player. And I think the reason that he's very popular as a Spurs pick, if the Spurs decide to move up in the draft, one, it would give Victor Wembanyama some continuity in teammates.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Those two already have good chemistry. They know how each other plays. And two, Bilal Coulibaly is still fairly raw.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lot of things he can learn, and he's very moldable in what you can have him do on offense. I think he's already a solid defender from what I understand. So you potentially draft your Keldon Johnson replacement there and feel better about it. I mean, if he's, you know, you've got his range here as 9 to 16, averaging 12. The Magic, I would argue, may not even need a win now player at 11, because I think they're going to trade the number 11 pick. They've been dangling, from what I've been hearing, they've been dangling potentially 6 and 11, but a lot of 11 is what I'm hearing, because they will draft a win now player at 6. But if they can get something in return, like another player who is established, maybe a Keldon Johnson, who, by the way, would be the first non-long boy on the Magic's roster. I mean, almost everybody else on that roster is some sort of long boy. I mean, you got Paolo Banchero, you have Bol Bol, you have Wendell Carter, you have Franz Wagner, you have Mo Wagner. It's insane. you have all these tall dudes. So Keldon Johnson would be like, yeah, I'm going to bring our average height down a little bit here. One of the scenarios there, you could maybe get Taylor Hendricks, who I also happen to like and I think would be really nice at 11, but I haven't. I mean, you've got on here, people may or may not be able to see, is that. There's certainly opportunities to get up and get him, but you have to, if you're the Spurs and like for whatever reason, Taylor Hendricks is your guy, if you decide that's the guy we're trading up for, you have to be incredibly sure that he is going to be available at 11. Because I don't think there's a guarantee of that. If for whatever reason the Mavericks keep their pick, I think there's a good chance they take it.
Okay, yeah, no, for sure. And it doesn't look right now from what we see here that he's going to fall to 11. I mean, 10th might be the worst he does based on what we're seeing here, like you said, the Mavericks. So Trevor mentioned two guys here, Kobe Bufkin and Jalen Hood-Schifino. Kobe's supposed to go there at 12th and kind of his average range, and then Jalen's is at 14th. Do you have any interest in whether or not the Spurs should try to maybe not trade Keldon, but maybe try to trade a future first or you know, multiple firsts, just try to get in that area? What do you think in that late lottery range?
Yeah, I would even, I mean, I like the guys Trevor mentioned, and to be a little contrarian, I would say I would not trade up for Grady Dick. I would agree. I would assume Trevor didn't mention him for
no, he didn't. No, just he just mentioned Kobe and Jalen as like two players that I didn't have on the board that he kind of, and that's why I put their names in there now that I've talked.
Okay, about. I gotcha. So yeah, like Kobe, I think Kobe Bufkin has been getting a lot of hype. He still scares me a bit as a potential second ball handler. I mean, Jalen Hood-Schifino kind of has the same issues. I think Hood-Schifino is listed at 6'4 right now. And he would be kind of an undersized two. He's certainly not a good enough ball handler to be a one. But I think if they go in a completely different direction, and I've been seeing the hype for Derek Lively lately to be, apparently he's been having really great workouts. And so he's moving up boards. That was the guy who was the top recruit in the 2023 class. And, you know, he had an injury he suffered. He wasn't playing the role people thought he would at Duke. He wasn't shooting as much as maybe he did in high school. So people got a little scared, or they got a little scared off Derek Lively. But I think if the Spurs drafted him at 11, if they go up and get the magic pick, 2 7-footers recreate some Twin Tower action. That could be wild because, I mean, Victor Wembanyama will have more of the offense earlier than Derek Lively will, but they both should be fairly good defenders right away.
Okay.
And at the very worst, Derek Lively is a pick and roll lob threat and a rim runner, which you can certainly use. I mean, they use Jakob Poeltl that way, and no slight to Jakob Poeltl, who was a phenomenal center and was fantastic in a Spurs uniform. But Derek Lively is much more athletic.
Yeah.
And should get above the rim, and he is a major lob threat. Like I think if the Spurs did that, it would be incredibly surprising. I think a lot of people would say, wow, did not see that coming. But I could see the Spurs getting a little weird and saying, you know what? We got two titles out of Twin Towers. Why not try for a couple more?
Yeah, and then the fact that he and Wemby could just grow together in then those 4 years that they're on the rookie contracts. And honestly, I wouldn't even call it surprising because there was just a report out this past weekend from Yahoo Sports that they're going to target centers in either free agency or via trade. So what if they just find a center in the draft, like Derek Lively there at 11, you know? That's why I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I'm actually going to keep that. That's very interesting. I'm going to definitely keep an eye on him at wherever he goes and see if San Antonio gets involved there. So again, those are just some prospects there in the first round. In the event the Spurs do try to move up in the lottery, like Ben and I kind of agreed, is that, like, you know, if there's a deal out there that a player that they really want, I don't think they're going to say, you know, no to maybe having to add Keldon in a trade if that's what it's going to take to move the needle over there. All right, Ben, now let's just go through a scenario where the Spurs are able to package 33 and 44 for a late first round pick. So it doesn't have to be a lottery pick, maybe somewhere like 18 to 30 range. So let's just say a team agrees to that kind of a deal. And so I'm just gonna name a few players here that are kind of showing up in these ranges on mocks, and just tell me if any of these players intrigue you. We have Keontae George; his mock average is about 18th. We have Nick Smith Jr. out of Arkansas; his average is 18th. Also, Olivier Maxence Prosper average is 23rd. Jaime Hawkins Jr., who has been moving up, 25th. Bryce Sensabaugh, 28th. Derek Whitehead, 29th. And then a player that Trevor liked that I didn't have on my board was James Nnaji; his average is about 29th. Any of those players intrigue you?
So it's funny Trevor mentioned James Nnaji. So he's been working out with Serge Ibaka. I believe he's out of Barcelona. That's the
team. Yeah, FC Barcelona.
FC Barcelona. They just released his measurements. I don't think he was at the combine. So somebody just released his measurements, and he measured out 7 feet in shoes.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
So a lot of people are now very intrigued with James Nnaji. And I think that's going to get him moved up boards. The height, the wingspan, that's what's going to do it. I'm not sure the Spurs make that pick. It also depends on what those two second round picks get you, if you know, where it gets you in the late first round. I mean, if it only moves you, I would be surprised if it only moves them up about 4 spots to 29. And I'm not sure I would take Nnaji before 25, just because I just don't know as much as maybe some other people do about Nnaji. So I'm not as comfortable making that pick. But a guy like Olivier Maxence Prosper, who I have gotten to watch and who played at Marquette this past year, who actually he's a bit raw for being a guy who spent 3 years in college. Part of it was he really didn't get a lot of playing time at Clemson, and then he was figured himself out at Marquette the last 2 years. But he's a guy I really like too, who's who's kind of raw on offense, but he should be a solid defender. You're going to have to teach him a few things, but I think he could be a solid defender. The shooting has to be more consistent. I think he's a good spot up, but he's not really doing much off the dribble, but he's good out in transition. I like him a lot. And if the Spurs get him at 23, I wouldn't hate that either. I'd prefer to, I know it's only like two or three picks, but I'd really like to see him at 25 or 26. Mm-hmm. I just think that's great value. But a guy like Jaime Jaquez is interesting to me because he's basically been a second round. He's been solidly a second round guy for a lot of the college basketball season. And I think just recently I've been seeing him move up a bit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'd like him too. That's a guy who, you know, can shoot. He can shoot threes. He can shoot in the mid range. He can get to a spot in the mid range. He makes tough shots. I would not hate that pick at all. I kind of like that pick, as a matter of fact. Those two guys are probably who I feel best about at around those spots.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, that's in the event that the Spurs can. You know, it doesn't have to be both picks. Maybe it's like 33 and something else to move up to, late first round. We'll see what happens there. All right. So now, you know, we don't know for sure yet if the Spurs are going to even use these two picks, the 33 and 44. You know, there's been rumors out there that they're trying to package them together or move off of them, just because they already have a lot of players under contract just coming into this coming season. They don't have a lot of roster spots. And then if they want to bring back like Julian Champagne and Dominic Barlow, then a lot of their two-way spots are taken up. They would just have one. So that's why I think I'm leaning toward probably the Spurs not using these 33 and 44 picks. But let's just talk about some prospects in the event they do use them. So here's some players at 33 on different mocks. So there's just one mock that had Jaime Jaquez there. I don't think he'll fall there. I think he's going to go before that. We have Trace Jackson Davis, mock average is 31st. Kobe Jones's mock average is right there at 33. Gigi Jackson, mock average 34. Andre Jackson, who I saw that you just finished writing a piece on in the back end for us, Project Spurs, 36. Marcus Sasser, 36. And then, or is there anyone that you would prefer there at 33? So what are your thoughts on any of these players?
GG Jackson at 33 is very interesting to me.
Okay.
There's a lot of people. I saw one mock draft, and now I can't remember whose it was, but I saw a mock draft that actually had GG Jackson going to the Spurs at 33.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And their logic was basically, if this guy had stayed a year in high school like he was supposed to, and if he had gone to UNC in this recruiting class, in the 2023 recruiting class, possibly he's a lottery pick in the next draft.
Wow. Okay.
Right. And there was a lot of talk about him, despite his age, being potentially a lottery pick in this draft. That is until, he got benched for a couple games in the middle of the season because there were maturity issues. But to be fair, South Carolina was also horrific.
Okay.
If you're supposed to be the star player on a team, and your teammates kind of suck, and your coach isn't giving you much to work with, I might be upset too. But also, you made the decision to reclassify, go early, and go to a school that you had to know was not going to be a very good team. So, a lot of that falls on Gigi Jackson too. So a lot of people are logicking it out and saying, or rationalizing it and saying, Gigi Jackson could. He could be served by a couple of years in the Spurs system, and they can kind of knock the immaturity out of him. And I'm like, maybe, but why would they want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you see something truly special, why are you bothering grabbing a guy who's essentially a flyer at 33, even early in the second round? That's a guy you're maybe using for a two-way. Why would I bother grabbing a guy who's going to have maturity issues? How is he going to respond when we send him down to the G League?
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing in the G League. So I don't like that pick. I don't like the rationale behind it. Not a fan. But between those guys, Andre Jackson and Trace Jackson Davis to me are very intriguing. Although I would say TJD, probably less so if the Spurs really are targeting another center in this draft and get some, they move up into the first and get somebody, I would say, don't even bother looking at TJD. There's no way he's going to San Antonio. But if for whatever reason they get a wing maybe in the first round and they move up, TJD could be on the radar there. really good. So he's undersized at 6'9" as a center. Mm-hmm. Great defender, though. Abused everyone who guarded him in the post. It didn't matter who you put on him. He was getting buckets for Indiana, period. Mm-hmm. And he was a good enough passer that when he was getting double teamed, he passed out of it. He may not have a lot of assists, but that's because there are really only one or two other guys on that team who could shoot the ball. Oh. The other being Jalen Huccifino. But him at 33 would not hate. Andre Jackson, I happen to like a lot. That's a connective guy. That's a glue guy to me, Andre Jackson. I just wrote that. It's actually the headline for that. Hopefully it's coming out, you know, Wednesday or Thursday before the draft.
Yeah.
But there's not anything he does extremely well. He kind of does everything, a little bit of everything fairly well. He has to become a better shooter. He has a weird hitch in his shot. It looks like a push shot. It's a problem for sure. But defensively, he's very good. He's high energy. He's a great rebounder. He's a good passer. He's a great cutter. So to me, Andre Jackson at 33, I think, is a really nice pickup. And you send him to the G League and say, hey, these are all the mechanical things we want you to fix with your shot. Work on it here.
Okay, so you said Andre Jackson there, and then if they draft a wing early, or they get a wing early, like via trade, then maybe look at Trace Jackson Davis. But if they get a big, then probably not looking at it. Okay, so there's some options there at 33, and then lastly, let's just again say that they don't trade 44 and they end up drafting a player. Let's just talk about some names here that are popping up on different mocks, and then you kind of just tell me if any of these players intrigue you. We have Tristan Vukcevic. His mock average is 45th. Seth Lundy mock average is 43rd. Jordan Walsh, who the Spurs did work out, comes in right perfectly at 44th. Terquavion Smith, he just showed up today on a mock on Tuesday at 45th. We have Kobe Brown, 46th. Adama Sanogo also wasn't on the Spurs radar, but now he's a player that somebody put on a mock at 48th. And then Imani Bates, 52nd. Or is there anybody else that would intrigue at 44? What's your thoughts there?
I do like Adama Sanogo. That's another one that's going to be dependent on what the Spurs do earlier in the draft, even what they do at 33, if they keep that pick. Because if they end up with a guy like TJD at 33, they're definitely not picking Adama Sanogo at 44. But if they do need a backup big and a guy that they know is going to play hard, is going to play basketball the right way, Adama Sanogo is that guy. He's a little undersized as well at 6'9", probably bigger and stronger than TJD, popped out a little bit and shot in the mid-range a little bit, but wasn't taking huge volume there. Took some threes here and there throughout the season. Was fine. But that's a guy I'd be interested in at 44. There's one other guy, if he falls there, I would love to see this guy in a Spurs jersey, Keontae Johnson.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. From Kansas, right? Or Kansas State.
Kansas State. Yeah.
Kansas State. Mm-hmm.
So originally started at Florida. He was the player who had the heart issue, collapsed on the floor against FSU. Mm-hmm. Kansas State cleared him. Had a phenomenal season this year. I had always been a fan of his. I always thought he was gonna be a good draftable player. He's a big wing. He's 6'5" or 6'6". He's like 230 pounds. He is strong. Mm-hmm. He has gotten better as a shooter every year in college, and he will do all the little things too. That's a guy I've always been rooting for. Love his game, love him as a person. Think he would be a great fit in San Antonio.
Yeah, he's actually a player who pops out to me just because I watched a lot of the tournament and they went pretty far, Kansas State. You know, I know just one of the plays that comes to mind is that one where the point guard's looking at the coach and then he does that no look alley-oop pass to Keontae Johnson. When I was watching those games, it was like I wasn't as plugged in to like keep an eye on mocks and stuff. I thought he was like a first round pick project just because he had that NBA sized body. Like he's a huge dude who's like already ready. He looks like an NBA player in terms of physicality. And then when I started doing the mock stuff and I'm like, oh my, he's like a late second rounder. So I guess you know you told me the reasoning there, but yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to them taking him as well. And then
he's on the Trevor side as well. That's I think one of the other reasons he's the second.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, he's, yeah. He's, I think he's already 22.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and then one guy that Trevor was very critical, if I could just say, and I think you've done this as well, is that Imani Bates, right?
If you're the Spurs, you don't touch that with a 10-foot ball.
Okay, yeah, that was very much what Trevor said there too. So, all right, man. So, yeah, like I said, thanks, Ben, for joining me. I mean, again, it was just good to get your thoughts, and then especially that we had more recent information that you can get your thoughts on. So we'll see what happens. You know, obviously, we know the easiest job for the Spurs is taking number one. That's going to be Victor Wembanyama, and then from there, it will be interesting to watch. I think that's what makes it fun, even though because we already know now for a month since they won the lottery that they're taking Wemby. So it's kind of been very quiet around here. But now that it's getting a little bit, there's picking up some steam that they might trade for another lottery pick. Well, then that gets a little interesting here, so that makes it a little bit more fun to watch this draft, aside from the part where Wemby gets drafted. So thanks, Ben. Have a great day.
All right, thanks.
And now joining the Spurs cast is former Project Spurs writer Trevor Zitgraff. Trevor is very into the draft, you know, into college basketball, and also just kind of evaluating prospects. He's one of the people that we've had on the Spurs cast before. So welcome, Trevor. And I really wanted to get your opinion here on a few of the players in the first round or lottery. How do I say it? Draft picks in the first round. There you go. My lingo is all over the place. So obviously, Trevor, the easy decision for the Spurs is that they're going to take Victor Wembanyama number one. So that's the easy part. What I want to visit here is, what about them possibly trying to trade up for a player that they might have had some prior interest in? So the first two players we're going to talk about are players that either they either worked out or maybe they interviewed at least at the combine or they've interviewed along the way. And whether that was before or after they knew they were going to get Wemby. So the first player, let's start here, is Jairus Walker. He's 6'8". His draft range is like that fifth to seventh area. He's expected to go about sixth there on the average mocks. Then we have Anthony Black, 6'7", out of Arkansas. Draft range is also 6-9. Average is about eighth. And then Cason Wallace, a little bit further down, he's 6'4". Draft range is about 10-16. Average is 14th. And then I listed here the teams that are kind of there from 6-14. You have the Magic with 6. They've been reported to be shopping those picks. They have two of them in the first round. We have the Pacers at 7. They're looking for a starting caliber wing, reportedly. We have the Wizards at 8, the Jazz at 9, the Mavs at 10, who have been shopping that pick as well, but they want to get like an immediate player who's going to improve their team to help out Luka. 11 is the Magic. 12 is the Thunder, 13 the Raptors, and 14 the Pelicans. So I don't know how you want to take that question, Trevor. Do you think that, first let me just ask you this, do you think it's worth the Spurs trying to trade up to get one of those players? Or, and then do you think they have the assets, you know, whether that's, you know, packaging those two future seconds, I mean, those two second round picks, or some future first round picks that they have? I do want to know before you answer this question that we did get some reporting from Mike Finger of the San Antonio Express News that when GM Brian Wright from the Spurs was asked about whether or not Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell could be traded, he said no in terms of like they're not shopping those two players. So I know that's a lot of information. What's your thoughts there on those two players?
So let's start with not shopping. Thanks for having me, by the way, Paul. It's always a pleasure to be here talking draft with you. We're going on like a decade of talking the draft. So we'll start with the Finger report first, which is not shopping Devin and Keldon. First of all, I guess I would be stunned if Brian Wright came out and said, like, yes, we are shopping our starting shooting guard and small forward, but also like for a variety of reasons, like A, because those, like, I don't know, I feel like you're limiting their value if you do that. And also, like, I don't know, part of me also thinks, like, from a sentimental perspective, like, those are Brian Wright's guys. And so, like, he drafted those guys. Like, and so... Mm-hmm. He probably wants to see, like, what do these guys look like now that I have a potential superstar in Victor Wembanyama anchoring this offense, like, and defense. What do these guys look like when they're not overtaxed as starters? You know, like, I mean, those guys are starting basketball players, but like, they got asked to do a lot last year, especially. So it doesn't surprise me that he says that they're not shopping, but also, like, let's say. Let's say the Pacers, for example, because you mentioned they there are reports out there that they're looking for a starting wing.
Yes.
You know, if the Pacers called and offered like at 7 and whatever, like for Keldon, like, I don't know, like that's, yeah, listen, like it's, you know, like whatever, Keldon and future Atlanta pick or future Spurs pick or whatever. I think you at least have to borrow the Bill Simmons phrase. You got to have a meeting about it, like a long meeting about it. Mm-hmm. Because then I think you really are talking about Jairus Walker, or Anthony Black in particular. I think Kayson Wallace's range is, it's at least wider. It's probably a little bit, I think it's definitely like lower than seventh. So I think you have to listen, but let me ask you, I've been talking to as many people as I can about this question. And it's like, if the Spurs bring back Trey Jones, which I think they're going to bring back Trey Jones because they have his restricted rights anyway, so it's not like they're going to, it's not like they're going to get outbid. So they bring back Trey Jones, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Jeremy Sohan, draft Victor Wembanyama, and bring back Zach Collins. And we assume, because I feel like we've heard this both on the Wembanyama side and then some comments from Pop at the end of the year, like Zach Collins is the starting center because they don't want Victor Wembanyama playing center full-time to start his career. So that's two starters right there of Trey Jones, Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Jeremy Sohan. Like, who are the other three starters? And my suspicion is they would still want Trey Jones starting the point guard, but like, who of Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, and Jeremy Sohan do you have come off the bench?
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Like, I think Sohan could do it, and maybe I don't even know if he'd be the best fit because I want him playing with Wembanyama as
much. Yeah, exactly.
So, and I think, again, I think, you know, Devin's probably the second best player on the team, assuming Wembanyama is the first. So I think he's also like pretty well suited to come off the bench, but I don't know. It's like going to be a contract year for him. So unless they extend him and then are like, hey, by the way, we need you to be like the super six man like Manu was, it's hard. And I don't think Keldon would be like a really good six man. Like, I think that guy should be like playing off of other great players and just like attacking the rim or hitting open three. You know what I mean? So it's a really, I don't know the answer. It's a hard one. Like, I don't know what the answer is.
My answer to that would be, I think they just go more unorthodox, like what kind of how we saw them end the year, just because I think Trey was injured, where they have, we saw Branham starting there at the point. So I think that they go unorthodox with like Devin, Keldon running the one and two kind of thing, even though it's not, you know, it's not typical what you would normally see, just because like, you're right, I don't think they can risk, you know, having Sohan in year two coming off the bench, wasting those minutes. You got to see what he does with Wembanyama. I think that the key is to have Devin, Wemby, and Sohan all on the court as much as possible, just to build that chemistry that just in year one together, and just especially for Sohan's versatility defensively. Now, it is a weird lineup because, like I said, I don't see Sohan as a typical three, and it's not like you had mentioned to me off air, he's going to be great defensively. He's going to be fine, I think, great, you know, guarding different, you know, smaller players, taller players. It doesn't matter defensively. I think it's the offensive part, the fact that he's not quite just yet that shooter from outside. He kind of just does a lot of things off the ball, and so that's kind of where it's going to be weird to watch. So I think that's what they would do. Now, if they do start Trey, and they, let's just say they resign him, I agree where I think the default player to put on the bench is Keldon, but then like you said, he doesn't quite fit there. But I just think that's where I think he's the player who would have to go to the bench in that case, in the event that they want Trey. And so that's kind of my answer there. And it is interesting because we know they're gonna run into this problem with Wemby, Sohan, and that five, whoever it is, even if it's not Zach Collins, because I know there was a report that they're gonna look to try to sign a starting level free center or trade for a center. I just think those three players have to start that five, and then Wemby and Sohan, and it's just weird where do you put them. So again, I think just because they don't have a lot of expectations next year, they definitely want to improve. They can kind of experiment and not be as, you know, traditional.
Yeah, and they may like start one way, and if it's not working, or they just, because they want to see what it looks like the other way, then maybe they just toggle with that fifth starting spot. But to answer your question about, like, you know, they were interested in Jairus Walker. I can't remember. Did they interview him, or did they just interview him, right?
Yeah, I have some somewhere. I think they just interviewed him. Yeah, I'll pull it up real quick.
So first of all, I think he's awesome. And like, I think he's like actually like, because of how just like gigantic he is, if you were going to be like, Wemby, you're the five, you know, quote unquote five, but Jairus Walker's like a monster, and he's going to be able to guard all the big, like the biggest dudes, except for like Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic. I think he's like, he would be a great fit, but also like, even if you traded Keldon, that doesn't, I mean, maybe in year one, it answers the question of like, who's coming off the bench. But like, at some point, you're still going to run into the exact same issue of, we have too many big wings now. Like it's so funny. Like they went from having not enough size to like this overwhelming amount of size now. And also like, I feel like if you're trading into that, like 5 to 7 range, you are expecting the person you draft to start, maybe not right away, but you want them starting within the first year and a half. And so same thing goes for Anthony Black. I love Anthony Black. Shooting concerns aside, he does everything else well.
Yeah,
he would just be such a good tip of the spear defender. But yeah, I don't know. It's just like they have the assets, like, because you know whether or not he's on the like available or not is irrelevant. Like they have the assets between Devin and Keldon, and I don't think they want to trade Devin. I don't think they want to trade Sohan. I don't think they would trade him for anybody else in this draft who's not named Victor Wembanyama, but like they have the players and certainly they have the assets, like all the Atlanta picks, that Toronto pick, which they might get as soon as next year, because who knows what Toronto's going to do. The Chicago, they have a Chicago pick coming in a couple of years, that Boston pick swap, they are their own picks. So, I mean, I feel like they could overwhelm a team with just future draft capital and get up there. Cason Wallace, I think, would be the perfect, because of the way he could spread the floor and spot up. I think he's like the perfect archetype of point guard to play next to the rest of the guys they have on the team. But I don't know. It's so unSpurs for them to just, especially to make such a big move. Like packaging 33 and 44 to move into the 20s, I could absolutely see.
Yeah,
it's like seeing them being like, all right, we just gave up one of the Atlanta unprotecteds and we just gave up our own unprotected. I don't know, like that's just hard for me to
do. You think that gets them, do you think one of those teams says yes in the top 10, where I mean, like from like 6 through 10 range, like sure, just two future first, not Keldon, or like not an actual player?
No,
do you think that's not, it's not enough to move from 6? Okay, that's interesting.
Maybe Washington, because Washington has just done a pretty hard reset on
very true
on what they're doing. They're just trying to like get money off the book. So maybe Washington does, but I feel like the Magic want to compete. They don't have any use for more draft capital. I mean, everyone could use more draft capital, but it's not priority. The Pacers never want to tank, and I think they probably view this as a really strong position for them. They started off really strong last year. I think they feel like they could make the playoffs. Washington, we just talked about, like they've hit the reset button, so maybe. But I also think like you'd have to overwhelm them. Like that's like, I don't know, like maybe like, you know, the Spurs top two protected and the Atlanta unprotected, you know, just like something like really overwhelming. I think the Jazz are good. They've like, I don't know how many more picks they think they need.
They've stocked a lot. Mm-hmm. Same thing for the Thunder. They don't want
same any more thing picks. With the Thunder. I think the Raptors would just be like, we're not answering your phone calls. Please do not call us anymore about trades.
Especially if Pirtle leaves them.
Right, exactly. Like, exactly. And then that just leaves us with the Mavs at 10 and the Pelicans at 14. And again, I think those teams are looking for players. So, it's hard. It's hard.
I'm just going to read Mike Finger's actual tweets, just because I don't want to say the word shopping. I feel like I kind of just threw that out there. I want to give him
exactly what
he
said.
So I'm just going to read his two tweets that he tweeted earlier. And I do want to note that Trevor and I are recording this episode on a Monday, June 19th. So here's what Finger wrote. Just for the sake of due diligence, ask Brian Wright if there's any realistic deal out there that would make the Spurs open to dealing Devin Vassell or Keldon Johnson. No, he said before I could finish. Stressed how much the Spurs want to find out what this group can do, kind of what you said there, Trevor. They just want to see, you know, he wants to see the guys, like you said, the guys he drafted, what is this team capable of, at least for half a season there. And then he put, package the 2 second rounders together to move up. Wright said, sure, maybe. Use future draft assets to move up. Wright said, sure, maybe. trade Vassauer Johnson. Wright said no flatly. So again, that's giving some, again, we're not saying that they were shopping them, but I think like Trevor's saying, like if it's Keldon and, you know, that the teams are calling about, maybe the Spurs are having a conversation. Maybe they're not going to say yes, but you know, that's the difficult thing about moving into getting one of these players like Anthony Black or Jairus Walker, is that like Trevor said, you have to give one of these teams like the Pelicans or the Mavs, you have to give them a real player who's already playing, the Pacers. That's the hard thing. If you're not willing to give Keldon, then it gets a little bit tougher for those win now kind of teams.
Doug McDermott's expiring. It's not going to get it done.
Yeah, exactly. And then I just want to ask you this. So obviously we've had that conversation about, you know, what it would take to try to move up. Yeah. Are there any other prospects that intrigue you? Maybe the Spurs haven't had any interest in these players. So there's some other players in that 6-14 range, or Oscar Thompson, 6-7. We have Taylor Hendricks, 6-9. Derek Lively, the second, 7-1. And then Bilal Coulibaly, a Wemby's actual teammate in France, 6-7. Any of those players intrigue you? If the Spurs were, should the Spurs try to move up for one of those players?
Yeah, I mean, all four intrigue me to a certain extent. Asar Thompson's hard for me just because, like, part of me is like, I don't know what he excels in on offense. And at the same time, like, Andre Iguodala is one of my favorite players ever, and I couldn't tell you what Andre Iguodala excels in offensively. So like he's like the ultimate connector, you know what I mean? So like, I think that's hard for me to say on Asar Thompson, but I just do not buy the jump shot. And like, I guess, and I'm of the opinion, and I know I get a lot of people clapping back at me on Twitter about this, but like, I guess I need to see Jeremy Sohan be an average floor spacer before I believe that he's going to become an average floor spacer. Like, shooting free throws one-handed at a consistent rate is, I think it's great for his confidence, like because now I'm sure he feels like, I can attack the basket, and if I have to go to the free throw line, I have something that's going to get me making 75-80% of my free throws, whereas opposed to at the beginning of the season, I can't even remember what he was shooting. Like, it was, I think it was sub 50%. So to me, like, that was the important development for Jeremy Sohan, is the jumper's not there, but he has other ways of contributing it from a scoring front. But having Trey Jones, who cannot shoot yet from distance, Jeremy Sohan cannot shoot yet from distance, and then like throwing Asar Thompson into the mix, it's like, man, like I can't remember the name of the new shooting coach the Spurs got, but that's just a lot. Yeah. That's a lot to throw on his plate. Taylor Hendricks, I find very intriguing. I think like maybe he's a little too he occupies too much of the same space that Wembanyama would on offense, but also maybe if you're getting him in the 10 range, I don't know, maybe he's just a perfect bench guy early. Who's a good, like Trey Murphy for New Orleans comes off the bench.
Oh yeah.
Or at least he was, you know, like when they're healthy, when they're fully healthy, Trey Murphy comes off the bench. And I think he was a late lottery pick. So it's not like unheard of that young late lottery picks come off the bench. Derek Lively, I think is very intriguing for all the reasons that we talked about with Zach Collins starting. Like, you want a five next to Wemby, like almost at all times. And so that's a guy that looks like he can defend the post. It looks like he can defend the rim. Maybe he can hit an outside shot. I don't know. The workout videos are intriguing, but we'll see. And then Coulibaly, I don't know, man, like that guy's just seems like he's all potential, you know? And I mean, I know he's been productive in the playoffs, but like, he just seems so raw, and like, he's very much a boom or bust guy. And I don't know, like if you already have Wemby, maybe it's okay to go boom or maybe it's okay to take a stab on a boom or bust guy, especially if it's a late lottery boom or bust guy. And at the very least, like that helps Wemby's transition from Europe, you know, to have one of his teammates there with him. So, you know, I'm intrigued by all four of those guys. And if you told me the Spurs packaged 33-44 and a future unprotected first to go get one of those guys, I don't think I'd be upset with any of that.
Yeah, no, same here. I would definitely, especially for like a player like Coulibaly, I just like the fact that he's 18, he's already playing, you know, pro ball and really showing up and helping Wemby and you know that French team get as far as they did.
Two guys I do like, Paul. They're a little bit farther down than this, and I don't think I've heard them mentioned anywhere as far as the Spurs go, but just a couple of guards are Jalen Hood-Schifino and Kobe Bufkin. I've been watching some Jalen Hood-Schifino lately, and it's like one thing that Matt Tynan and Bruno Passos and I often go back and forth about is like, who would be the good, Parker to Wemby's Duncan? Who would be the good Jamal Murray to Wemby's Jokic? And and maybe it's just from the way he looks on the court, but Jalen Hood-Schifino looks like he can hit. The three's not there yet, but like just the way he can kind of snake into the lane and hit a pull-up jumper or even get to the rim, like with a good floater or something. Maybe I've got too much Jamal Murray on my brain, but
he's a good player. If that's
very appealing down the road. And then Kobe Bufkin's like, it's like almost like he looks like the guy that I feel like they were hoping Josh Primo was going to become, like one of those, like,
yeah,
can just like, he's going to be able to defend the hell out of the ball because he's so long, and he can play on the ball. He can play off the ball primarily, but then hopefully you think he could be on the ball a little bit more as his career progresses. So two guys I've become really fond of as this draft cycle's gone on.
I want to throw some names at you. Just tell me if any of these players interest you. So let's say that the Spurs can package a 22 and 33 and 44 and get somewhere like in the 20s, a first round pick in the 20s in this year's draft. Mm-hmm. And so I know you can't really see this, but I'm just going to read some names to you. Let me know if any of these players intrigue you. These players are ranged from like 18 to like, stop here at 25, somewhere in that range. Okay. We have Keontae George, 6'4 out of Baylor. Nick Smith Jr., 6'5 out of Arkansas. Bryce Sensabaugh, 6'6 out of Ohio State. And then Olivier Maxence Prosper, 6'8 out of Marquette. Any of those players, if the Spurs were to try to put a package those two second rounders,
like Keontae and Nick Smith, for a lot of the same reasons I mentioned about Kobe Bufkin, like the ability to play on and off ball. You know, Nick Smith had a really weird injured year, and when he came back to Arkansas, it was like, he came back so late that it was like trying to fit him into a team that kind of had already, I think, figured it out, its rotation and everything. So it was just weird. But I do remember, like, it might have been when they were playing Alabama. They were playing a high-profile SEC team. And I just remember there was, like, a stretch where Anthony Black got early foul trouble. And all of a sudden, Nick Smith just became the team's point guard and was just being a floor general out there. And I was like, oh, man, look at that. But then, like, maybe there's something more than just, like, he's not just like Lou Williams, which would be awesome, by the way. If someone becomes Lou Williams, like that's amazing. Yeah. But I thought maybe there was some more like lead ball handler to him. And but then, this freshman year was just kind of a mess. And Keontae George, I feel like, is more off ball than on ball at this point. But there's those possibilities right there. And then I know you mentioned Omax. Who was the fourth person?
What was that guy's name? Bryce Sensabaugh.
Yeah, I don't know, man. They got a lot of guys who are either threes or twos, and but he's a hell of a scorer. So if they just decided they needed more scoring punch off the bench, I wouldn't trade up for him. If he fell, though, for sure. Okay. And the same Olmax, I would probably move up into the late, like the late to mid 20s to get, just because I feel like he's, someone who can defend up. And it just seems like he's just going to be the perfect role player. Like if he doesn't learn to shoot, that's like going to be the only thing he's not going to be able to do at that wing position. I think teams should value that later in the first round.
Okay. And now, so before we go into the second round picks, I kind of just want to preface it with this. Again, because the Spurs have, they're going to have Wemby coming in. And I want to give some shout out to Jeff McDonald on a recent Express News podcast that they have. McDonald, he didn't report that the Spurs are, trying to package those two picks, but that's just the general assumption that they're trying to move, to turn those two second rounders into maybe a first or a future pick down the road. But they don't really want to draft there at 33 and 44. But let's just say they can't find a deal and they do need to draft at 33 and 44. So that's what we're going to explore here in this question, Trevor. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read you a bunch of prospects that are kind of on different mocks at 33. Some of these players are a little bit ahead or further behind. And then just tell me who intrigues you there if that player falls there at 33. So we have Dariq Whitehead, Jamie Jacquez Jr., Kobe Jones, Gigi Jackson, Marcus Sasser, Andre Jackson, or is there someone else you would prefer at 33 if those players are there?
So I like Derek Whitehead was a lottery prospect before the season started. He's broken his foot. I shouldn't say he's broken his foot twice. He has had surgery on his foot twice now in the last 2 years. And I don't think, from what I've read, it doesn't sound like it's anything like, it's not like it's debilitating or anything, but 2 foot surgeries is 2 foot surgeries, but he can really space the floor. He's got great size on defense. So I think those are just like, those are two things that you really look for at the end of the, at the end of the first round. Or I guess at 33, we're talking about at 33, right?
Yeah. 33.
Yeah. So we have to, even more so at the top of the second, Jaime Jaquez, man, that's kind of my dream guy at 33, because like, he just does everything. I think in a more open offense, a more openly spaced offense. Like I think he's going to start hitting jumpers and stuff like that. And just like, if the Spurs don't want to spend money to bring back Keita Bates-Diop, like Jaime Jaquez is ideal to like be that like fourth or fifth guy off like wing off the bench. You know, like he can do the spot starting thing for a little bit, but maybe he's only doing 10 or 15 minutes a game other nights. But he's just going to do a little bit of everything. And he's older, you know, like he's 22 or 23 now. So he'd be one of the adults in the room to start off. I don't have much of an opinion on Colby Jones, to be perfectly honest with you. Gigi Jackson. So Matt Tynan, I do not think will be upset if I out him on this. He loves Gigi Jackson, like just the scoring upside. Like, but there might be some. I mean, there are maturity questions for him. Okay. So I think that where I've settled on is I don't think the Spurs want any part of anybody who's got maturity issues. And if the maturity issues seem overblown, Gigi Jackson is not going to be there at 33. So like, he's either going to be there and the Spurs want no part of him, or the Spurs are actually interested in him, but he'll be gone by then. Sasser, you tell me they're going to get an explosive scorer, or not explosive scorer, but someone who can add some scoring punch off the bench at 33. I'm in. Andre Jackson, I don't. He's just kind of a blind spot for me. I'll tell you one guy I'm interested in to see if he falls, Paul, is James Naji, who's playing in Spain right now. And he just measured at 7 feet tall with like a 7'8" wingspan. And, you know, he's a lob catcher. He's like, if any listeners looking for a player archetype, like he's in the Tyson Chandler mold because of how freaking huge he is. And again, this goes back to the protect Wemby at all costs. And so like, you got Zach Collins for now, and like maybe Zach Collins works, and I've actually really come around on Zach Collins as an NBA starter. I was very on him, even as late as midway through last season. But man, once Poeltl got traded and he stayed healthy, he was he just looked like everything you hoped he would be when he came out of college, when he came out of Gonzaga. But we cannot rule out that he's been injured for most of his career, and also that maybe there is a ceiling to somebody like that Collins. And so I just personally would like, if they can get like an athletic freak who they can just, you know, maybe he spends most of his time in Austin. Maybe he's just on the bench, just learning. It's, you know, I just like the potential that guy has. So that's like Jaime Jaquez and James Naji are like my two guys where I'm like, please let him fall to 33. Please let him fall to 33.
Okay, so I know Naji has been kind of like late first round to like, you know, maybe even early second round. So he could definitely fall there. I've seen his name on the boards. Yeah. I definitely like Jaquez, what he did with UCLA. I mean, these last 2 or 3 years, just especially when he gets to the tournament. I mean, he just keeps them in games. I mean, he's just one of those like hardworking, willing players. Like you said, like he's just like he's gonna do like kind of what Keita Bates' job does. Just kind of just does his job, does all the messy work, does all the dirty work that doesn't come up in the box score. So I'm really really like him a lot. So let me just ask you this. So it's not really how the question stated, but what percentage would you even say that Thursday comes and they still have that pick? Do you think that they're basically what's the percentage that they're going to trade the pick? What do you think?
I think 33 is like, I think 66% that they make that pick.
Okay, mine was 60%. I just say, I think 60% of that pick's not even going to be used.
I think it's a two-thirds chance that that pick gets used. I think, well, I know we're going to move on to 44 here in a little bit. I think 44%, like, I would flip it. I'd say there's, like, a 66% chance that pick gets traded.
Okay, okay. So I think, like, I think it's, like, a 60% chance that 33 is moving. Yeah. All right, now, this is kind of the same approach here with 44. These are just players that have kind of popped up on some mocks. Olivier Mexens Prosper, who you mentioned earlier. Again, this is more so of an outlier, the fact that he only won mock at him at 44. So I think his range is definitely from late first round, so I don't think he'll be there at 44. We already talked about Andre Jackson, another new player here. Tristan Vukcevic, a seven-footer. Draft range is about 41st. Seth Lundy, 6'6". Yeah. Average draft range is 43rd. Kobe Brown, 6'8". Draft range is 47th. And then Amani Bates, 6'10". Draft range is about 52nd, so a little bit later than the Spurs' pick. Or is there anyone else you would... So just give me, like, if you have any opinion on any of these guys. And then if not, is there anyone you would prefer the Spurs take if that player is there at 44?
So one guy I did see that they did work out in that, who would be in that range, is Jordan Walsh from Arkansas.
Yes,
who's, like,
yes.
Totally in that Omax, Andre Jackson, Kobe Brown, like that realm of player, you know, like that. Like,
yes.
You know, if you're putting players into bunches, like, Jordan Walsh is in there. And, like, I don't know. I also like the idea. I don't know what you think about this, Paul, but, like, find, like, someone who can do a lot of the stuff that Sochan does on defense, and even some of, like, the cutting stuff that he does at offense, but, like, just the ball handling's not there. You know what I mean? Like, just to, like, basically, like, all right, we're going to take Sochan out and we're going to bring in Sochan Light. Like, I just kind of like the idea of, like, finding, like, a Sochan Light who's got who has a ceiling as a bench player, but, like, a really helpful bench player. So in that sense, like, Omax, Andre Jackson, again, who, like, just my cursory knowledge of, he's in that area. Jordan Walsh, also, just, like, I'm certainly interested in those. You know, I'm going to talk about Amani Bates. I feel bad for Amani Bates because he was just, like, the next Kevin Durant when he was 14, which is just a stupid thing to put on anyone. And then he didn't grow, and, you know, he bounced around from one college to another. And just a mess. But, like, I don't know if he can just understand that his best chance to succeed, especially early, is to just try his ass off on defense and be a catch and shoot, like, maestro. Like, that's not, like, a bad player to have. And so hopefully, like, he's gotten enough feedback that says, like, you need to focus on these two things and then just let the rest of it come to you. But if people have been calling you the next Kevin Durant for, like, since you were 14, it's really hard to, like, to change someone's mind about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. And just like you said there with Jordan Walsh, I do want to say that, you know, the Spurs did work him out, and he was actually, he's on my draft board just because he was actually coming up on different mocks for San Antonio a few weeks ago. And then just this latest, and I just checked the mocks today, and that's kind of where I got these numbers from. And he wasn't there, but he's definitely in that realm there, in that draft range.
It's crazy. Like, you listen to, like, Sam Vecenie's really good about pointing this out.
Yes.
The difference between, like, pick 25 and pick 45 can just be, like, a front office guy believing in you more than other front office guys do. Like, the skill range of like a pick 25 and a pick 45, sometimes, depending on the draft, is not like that. It's not a big gap like you would think a 20 pick gap would be. So I guess it's just something to keep in mind as people are like, if someone drops from 25 to 45, like, that sucks for them. That sucks for their bank account, but it doesn't mean they're, like, that much worse than the guys who got picked ahead of them.
So, like you mentioned right before this, you think that 44 is probably going to get traded, right? That's your
I would get unless I don't know. Like, I guess one thing I've never really totally gotten the grasp on is, like, how much is 33 worth, or, like, is 33 and 44 enough to get you to 26? You know, like,
I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I've never totally been able to, and I'm sure it varies from draft to draft. I've always been I could tell you that two future protected firsts are worth the 14th pick in a draft. But the truth is, I have no idea. So I think one of those picks gets moved. I don't know which one. I would bet on 33 getting picked and 44 getting moved, but I don't know. It's a great question.
Yeah, if they can't find a package where like they put two for one, like, you know, two seconds for a first, I think one thing to look at is some of those like playoff teams that are already kind of like almost like capped out on all they have are like veteran minimums. And so that's where you see those scenarios where like, oh, the Lakers bought a second round pick, or, you know, the Clippers bought a second. I think that's the case where a team that you know, it's kind of capped out and doesn't have, they want a young player, and they'll put that player like on a 3-year deal with that new CBA for the second round picks. That's where I see that maybe there's individual transactions where teams take those two picks off the Spurs' hands. That's why I think that's why I'm very high on the chances of both those picks be moved, because even if it's not for a 2-for-1, then I think those capped out teams are gonna, you know, somebody like Phoenix who's gonna need they're gonna need as much help as possible at this point to have some sort of young players on their team. So
I also wonder, Paul, like, is like, I don't think the Spurs want to move Blake Wesley, but like, I don't know, like, would like, does 33, 44 and Blake Wesley get them up higher into the 20s? And I don't know, I honestly have no idea what the answer to that is, but like, I guess I just wonder, like, I don't know, I would be curious to know what other teams think of Blake Wesley. Like, everyone saw him in the G League. Everyone saw his potential in the G League. But is that one of those things where teams would try to like buy low on him just because he's like the last guy in the rotation, and the Spurs are like, no, like we want to put more time into this guy.
Yeah, that's a good question, because he's definitely one of the players, like, whenever I talk about like players are not going to trade, or like usually Branham or Sohan. Whereas Wesley, I don't put that, you know, that preference on his name. Sure. I just think that, I think that if there's a deal out there, they would. Based on just, again, it's just 1 year what I saw from him, but again, I wasn't, you know, it's hard to, like I mentioned this in prior Spurs guests, the fact that Sohan had such a good season in year one, and so did Branham, it was just always going to be difficult for Blake to match that, just because, you know, the other two had such a good season. So that's an interesting question. Yeah, I do wonder. And so, we'll kind of see what happens on Thursday, man. Here we go. I mean, we know the easiest job, man. I hadn't updated the my mock sheet since we knew they got Wemby. Like, you know, that was it's almost like those years when they had the championship teams, when all we had to worry about was like 25 Corey Joseph, you know, that kind of player. We didn't really have to worry about draft stuff. And now, I mean, I had been way more engaged in it once, you know, these last few years with them getting lottery picks. But now that we know they have Wemby, I mean, it was pretty easy.
I was gonna say, it's actually been a pretty boring.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a boring month, because it's like, once they got Wembanyama, it was like, even if they'd gotten like two or three, I'd have been like, well, they trade down. What if they, especially if they got in like three, because it's like, well, what does it cost to get the two to make sure you get the guy you want? And like, none of that stuff matters. Like, I was on Matt Tynan's podcast. I was like, maybe it was just out of board. It wasn't just out of boredom. I really believe in Scoot Henderson, but I was like, they should just call Portland and blow them away with an offer for Scoot Henderson. Like, just if Scoot Henderson's really falling to three, they should just offer Keldon like two or three unprotected picks. And I was like, I think I did that because I really like Scoot, but I also think I did that because there just hasn't been anything else going on for the Spurs this draft cycle. Like, it's like they didn't have an extra first where we could figure out what they were doing. So, but it's all going to be like, it's going to flip after this, because then it sounds like Wembanyama is going to play a little bit of Summer League, maybe play Summer League, current residents of Sacramento, California, Paul, we don't know.
We're both going for two different places. You're going for Sacramento for him to play. I'm going to Vegas. Yeah, because I'm going to be there for the first part of the week, the first week of Summer League.
So the California Classic, which is what the Sacramento Summer League's called, is it's two games per team. It's Monday, July 3rd, and it's Wednesday, July 5th, and
Charlotte and the Lakers. Which
Charlotte, you know, they want to put.
That can
be. I will be there. I will be in. I will 100% be in the building for that first game, because I feel like if he's going to play, it is going to be that first day. Like, they're not going to want to risk anything that second day. And then I think the same thing with Vegas. Like, their Vegas schedule hasn't been released yet, but I'm assuming it's going to be like Portland or whoever picks at three, or it's going to be some other like quote Vegas Summer League high profile game. So it's going to be a really fun summer, I think. You know, this is probably, I don't remember the Spurs like draft process when they were picking Tim Duncan. I remember vividly when Tim Duncan was picked and when they won the lottery that year. But I'm sure this is just as boring.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a fun summer. Like you mentioned, I mean, just you want fireworks, it's going to have to happen. Cause like, I just read that new CBA note that they have to meet the minimum team salary by training camp. Ooh, so they basically got to spend that money in July. Like they got to, you know, whether it's training for players or signing players. So that's going to be, it's going to be definitely a more aggressive offseason than we're used to seeing with Spurs.
I think it's definitely going to be like Trey Jones is going to get his money, but then I don't think Trey Jones getting his money is all that. I think they have to do at least one more thing. So whether that's
they have to take on
someone's contract or we were talking about Wembanyama around him. I like the idea of I don't like it as much as I did once I knew that Collins was kind of like that they have plans for Collins, but like I like Naz Reid. I think if you gave Naz Reid a decent contract and a promise of consistent minutes, whether that's off the bench or starting at five, but a consistently good role, that's a guy that I really like. He can floor space. He can.
Thanks to Ben and Trevor for joining me on this episode. I also want to say thank you to Joe Garcia for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.